Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded October 4th, 2023. Well, news of the Canadian Parliament's recent celebration of the career of veteran 14th Waffen SS Division Halchina soldier Yaroslav Honka has now circled the globe, projecting in glaring relief the stark contrast between this nation's public pronouncements of principles and the base reality of its actions. But more than shining light into the shadowed corners of Canada's past, the Nazigate affair reveals two extant fascist sympathies of the country's leaders in government, business, and the media, where even now the chorus of denial and pleas of ignorance, reminiscent of those heard in Nuremberg, serve to obliterate the memory of the murdered, muting the voices of those massacred in Ukraine in their tens of thousands by Honka's brothers-in-arms. As at Babi Yar, where the bodies of the dead were disinterred the burial pits and burned, their ashes spread across the verdant fields around Kiev to better conceal from the world the atrocities conducted there, another scattering is being conducted for the same purpose. This time, those throwing ashes in the eyes of history are doing so from the Parliament, like our government leader of the House of Commons, Carina Gould, who responds to the indignation and disgust of her fellow citizens and that of those elsewhere made aware of hers and her colleagues' egregious behavior, saying, quote, "Like all MPs, I had no further information than the Speaker provided. As a descendant of Jewish Holocaust survivors, I would ask all parliamentarians to stop politicizing an issue troubling to many, myself included." Troubling indeed. Glenn Michalchuk is president of both Peace Alliance Winnipeg and the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, or AUUC. He's been active in the peace movement for 40 years, going back to Ronald Reagan's dirty wars in Latin America. And Alex Boykovich is a third-generation Ukrainian Canadian, president of the Edmonton branch of the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, an active member of the Edmonton Peace Council and the Communist Party of Canada. Today, the Ukrainians in Canada, the tale of a people divided in two nations, with Glenn Michalchuk and Alex Boykovich. Well, welcome to the program, gentlemen. Alex, your Edmonton branch of the AUUC released a statement in response to the doings in the House of Commons last Friday, September 22nd. For those, Alex, still unaware, would you describe just what happened on that day?
Well, yes, Chris, thanks for inviting me to your program. Well, on 22nd of September, Friday, Ukrainian President Zelensky visited Canada and spoke to the House of Commons. I didn't actually watch the events as it happened live. I just watched the reporting on it on the national CBC, the National, in the evening. And the thing that really struck me was in that reporting, one of the highlights, if you can call it that, was that a 98-year-old Ukrainian veteran of World War II who fought against Russia was introduced and was given standing ovations in the House of Commons. And I found that very peculiar, and I immediately realized what the implications of that were. Namely, that this must have been someone who fought on the side of Nazi Germany against the Soviet Union. So I tweeted immediately about that, drawing people's attention to that. Other people, I would say on the left, also picked up on that. And then several Jewish organizations picked up on that and expressed their outrage. And I later tweeted something about my father, who was a Ukrainian-Canadian World War II veteran. He fought for Canada. And then other news outlets picked up on it. I started posting material from our old newspaper, from our association, the Ukrainian Canadian, which I had recently researched in Winnipeg. And it blew up. I think the Polish government commented on this as well. So several forces came into play expressing their outrage on that. And then our branch was really inspired to make our statement a week later because I think the Jewish Federation of Edmonton made a statement on this. There are a couple of these Nazi monuments in Edmonton, which they have always condemned. So we made our statement the following week, 29th of September, and it's been an incredible amount of pushback, I'm glad to say, against this honoring of this Nazi in the House of Commons. And so far, the Speaker of the House of Commons, as we all know, has resigned over it. And also we've drawn attention to the links between these veterans of the 14th Waffen SS Division Halachina, which is this Nazi Ukrainian regiment in which the 98-year-old person fought in. And we've drawn attention to the connection between those veterans and the Canadian Institute of Ukrainian Studies at the University of Alberta. They have several endowments. They had one endowment for $3,000 in the name of this individual, Yaroslav Honka, and they have several other endowments. So the University of Alberta, I'm glad to say, immediately or very quickly returned that endowment, but there are several more. So it's been an incredible pushback. I'm glad to say that there's been a great deal of outrage and resistance to this honoring of a Nazi, and there have been consequences paid for it, I'm glad to say, but there's still a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of these connections that have to be unraveled and reckoned with.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians branch to Edmonton, your branch, Alex, where that announcement appears. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that in a second. Well, Glenn, Anthony Rota, the past speaker, he said, and I'll quote some of his welcoming remarks, where he referred to Yaroslav Honka. He says he's a Ukrainian hero, a Canadian hero. And we thank him for all his service. Glenn, I know you do a lot of peace work, or work for peace, that is. As I remember, it's 48 or 9,000 Canadians died fighting against the Nazis in Europe. What's your reaction to Anthony Rota's, MP Anthony Rota's sentiment as expressed in his opening speech?
There's no way that anybody can defend what Rota said. It was a slap in the face to Canadians who did fight for Canada, but it was also a slap in the face, to all the forces that opposed Nazism in the Second World War. I wrote a letter to the Winnipeg Free Press. It hasn't yet been published, pointing out that not only what Rota did, but what all the MPs did, and their apologies have fallen far short of the mark. In this way, none of them have apologized to the Russian people who sacrificed enormously in the defense of the Soviet Union, the Ukrainian people who suffered enormously and sacrificed enormously in defense of their homeland against these very people that Parliament was recognizing. So it's interesting when you note these apologies, first of all, none of them take into account the Russian people, the Ukrainian people, who were the victims of this division. This division that Honka fought with targeted the Polish and Ukrainian partisans who were fighting behind the lines, as well as being, of course, part of various war crimes and massacres against the Polish and Ukrainian people. So, and it's incomprehensible that educated people cannot make the connection when you're introducing someone as being as fighting for Ukraine against Russia. But I think that says a lot, and maybe we'll explore this question or this issue a little bit further in your interview. I think it explains a lot about the politics in Canada, that it was enough for someone to say he was fighting Russia, and none of these people could make the connection. Instead, they saw it as a positive thing. So I think it says a lot about the state of politics in Canada, and it certainly it has certainly been an international debacle for Canada. I have never seen the status of Canada really sink to such a low level internationally. And these apologies, as I say, are far short of the mark. Canada really has to apologize to the world. It has to apologize to the other countries who are fighting Nazism. Even though Canada today considers them as not worthy of those apologies, Canada should apologize to them.
Well, Alex, as well as the apologies that Glenn mentions, there is also revisionism in the press. Articles like in the, I'm not sure that you're aware of the political piece in the United States, that says, and I'll paraphrase it, but fighting the USSR doesn't necessarily make you a Nazi. And in this, the author goes on to a pretty despicable description, Keir Giles of Politico. The actual title is, yes, fighting against USSR didn't necessarily make you a Nazi. So there's a lot of revisionism going on here as well. What's your response to his Keir Giles revisionism and some too that we're seeing here in Canada? I'm looking at a piece by Aaron Wary of the CBC, which is focused more on the lamenting the loss of civility in the House rather than what actually is going on.
Yeah, I'm aware of that political article. I haven't read it. But yeah, it's outrageous revisionism. I mean, if we just take this one unit, SS 14th Waffen SS Division Halicina, they swore loyalty oaths to Hitler. They wore German uniforms. They were under the command of German officers. And they committed atrocious atrocities. Actually, they were only, I believe they only fought the Soviets once in the Battle of Brody, and they were wiped out, and then they were reconstituted. They spent most of their time fighting partisans in, I think, even in Slovakia. They spent a great deal of time fighting the people there. And they spent time in Italy, and I think maybe Austria too. So it's just outrageous. And many of these people who joined this regiment, they came from, or I don't know if it's a regiment technically, division, they came from previous military formations or semi-military formations, the Nachtigall Battalion, and there was another one I can't remember, and police divisions. And they performed work like guards in concentration camps and policing kind of actions under Nazi command. So maybe these individuals were not members of the Nazi Party. I don't say that. But they were completely subordinate to Nazi Germany and the Nazi command structure, the Nazi military, and the Nazi Party. And they were involved in its most atrocious elitist formation, the SS, under the command of Himmler, the notorious Himmler, and then Hitler above him. So to try to whitewash these individuals is completely outrageous, and it's completely offensive. And it should be offensive to all of us who are not pro-Nazi, let's say, but even to us in the West who have forgotten, it seems, our contribution and our involvement in the Second World War. You know, that has seemed to be completely forgotten or eliminated from historical discourse. Canada fought against Nazi Germany, and the U.S. fought against Nazi Germany, and the U.K. fought against Nazi Germany, allied to the Soviet Union. And we shouldn't forget that, even though, you know, the Cold War and now the post-Cold War era has poisoned that kind of remembrance, but we shouldn't forget that.
Well, Glenn, in the Hansard record of the proceedings in the Canadian Parliament, on Monday, the 25th of September, following this debacle, the apologies are running like rivers. And one of them is an apology heartfelt to President Zelensky of Ukraine himself, apologizing for exposing him to the embarrassment of being connected to the 14th Waffen SS Grenadier Division that Hunke was a member of. But only, and as Alex says, as I recall my history, the SS required the utmost of loyalty oaths to become a member of, swearing allegiance to not only Germany, but Hitler himself. And so to divorce oneself from being a Nazi and being a member of the SS is beyond ridiculous. But Glenn, I don't know if you're aware, but only days later on his return to Ukraine, President Zelensky was greeted with an award of the emblem and flag of the 14th SS Grenadier Division by his own military, and he accepted that award graciously. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't, but that's a very interesting point that you make, because People have tried to suggest that Zelensky has been embarrassed by this. So to your point, when he was in parliament and when Anka was introduced, he stood up, and he stood up along with all the MPs, applauded, and I believe gave Yaroslav Anka a clenched fist salute. Now, it's incomprehensible that that Zelensky would have not known about the actions of this division. It's ingrained into the consciousness of ordinary Ukrainians, let alone people who are in positions of leadership in Ukraine. It was part of their education following the Second World War and to the generations that came, because Ukraine, like Russia, was determined to never forget. So no surprise that he was given this and accepted it. That's a very interesting point. I think it speaks volumes about the present Ukraine government, because there is attempts to suggest that the Ukraine government is not influenced by these types of politics to this day. We have to remember that these people who went and fought for the Nazis in the Second World War were part of a particular movement of Ukrainian nationalism that stretches back before the Second World War. And during the Second World War, they saw alignment with Nazis, the Nazi German Nazism and the German Nazi army as a way to accomplish their national goals in terms of Ukraine. And an ethnically pure Ukraine is what they wanted. So there is this tinge to Ukrainian nationalism of these very reactionary politics. And it's not a surprise that that Zelensky is receiving this when he returns to Ukraine. And I mean, given that import of what you just said, it would suggest this was very deliberate, to as a way to rehabilitate or push back against the story that's now being against the story in the Canadian media, which is very critical of what happened. And I would just note that this pushback has begun in the week immediately following the Ukrainian Civil Liberties Association, which is linked to the Ukrainian Canadian Congress, issued an email giving talking points as to what people, how people should oppose what the media was saying about Yaroslav Honka and the division that he fought for. And this pushback is continuing. The Ukrainian Canadian Congress is part of that pushback. And maybe we can get to this later on in the interview. That is really part of their history of support for not only this division, but very other reactionary sections of the Ukrainian organizations that participated on the side of fascism in the Second World War.
Well, Alex, I'm reading a piece here by Lev Galinkin in The Forward, a Jewish publication, and he is writing in it, he mentions in this article that Canadians perhaps should not be so surprised that people like Mr. Honka are feted the way they are, because he's not the first. And he goes on to say that Peter Saverin was awarded the Order of Canada in 1987, the Golden Jubilee Medal in 2002, and the Diamond Jubilee Medal in 2012. These are very high-level Canadian awards of citizenship given. Do you want to explain, Alex, because I know in your release you talk about some of these issues, who Peter Saverin is, firstly, and what these awards mean?
Well, I've been trying to find Peter Saverin's memoir, and it's very difficult to find, because apparently in that memoir he looks fondly back on his time in the 14th Waffen SS Division Halachina and praises his time in there, just like Yaroslav Honka did, apparently. But it's impossible to find this memoir right now. But Peter Saverin was a very important figure here in Alberta. Not only was he Chancellor of the University of Alberta, he was also president, I believe, of the Progressive Conservative Party here in Alberta, which is now the Ukrainian Conservative Party. It was the party which governed Alberta for decades and now has merged with the Wild Rose Party and formed the current governing party. It's been very good. I believe the Governor General of Canada currently, she just recently kind of repudiated the awarding of the Order of Canada to Peter Saverin. These awards are extremely prestigious in Canada. The Order of Canada is Canada's most important award, I believe. And famous artists, athletes, and people who've contributed to Canadian society received this award. So to give such an award to such a person for his years of service, we have to ask, how did his service in this Nazi SS division link up with his service to Canadian society, to the University of Alberta, to the Conservative Party in Alberta? And we can see a good example is the Canadian Institute of Ukrainian Studies at the University of Alberta. It's a think tank at the U of A. I don't believe they teach any classes, but they sponsor grad students, and they issue many, many publications on Ukrainian history. And Peter Saverin was a key figure in the founding of this institute. And that institute is the one that has had the $30,000 endowment from Hunka. They have a $400,000 plus endowment from Volodymyr Kubiyovich, who was the Nazi point man in Nazi occupied Ukraine for the Ukrainian Canadian community. And then his post-war project was this Encyclopedia of Ukraine, and that played a major role. It was the Canadian Institute of Ukrainian Studies, I believe, played a major role in providing students and other intellectuals to contribute to that encyclopedia project. And among those, in fact, was a young woman named Christia Freeland. She wrote articles for that publication. And in fact, her grandfather, Michael Chomiak, he was a newspaper editor in Nazi-occupied Poland. He worked underneath Volodymyr Kubiyovich. Kubiyovich basically appointed him to the editor position of the newspaper, the Krakowski Wieści, in Nazi-occupied Poland. So there are all these connections between these people who were prominent writers and lawyers in Ukrainian writers and lawyers in Nazi-occupied Poland. And then many of them came here, some of them veterans of the 14th Waffen-SS Division, others kind of civilian organizers of the division or promoters of the division in newspapers, propagandists. And then they came here, and then they made their contributions to Canadian society, which were honored. So it's something that really has to be deeply examined and dealt with, I think.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Glenn Michaelchuk. Glenn is president of both the Peace Alliance Winnipeg and the Association of the United Ukrainian Canadians, or AUUC. He's been active in the peace movement for 40 years, going back to the Reagan dirty wars in Latin America in the 1980s. And I'm also joined by Alex Boykovich. He is a third generation Ukrainian Canadian, president of the Edmonton branch of the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, and active member of the Edmonton Peace Council and the Communist Party of Canada. We're talking about and around the recent debacle in Canada's parliament and what this granting of a former SS soldier honors in front of the House has picked the scab on some nasty Canadian history. Glenn, Alex just mentioned the ingress into Canada of former Nazis, Ukrainian Nazis after the war. Can you talk a little bit about the history of Ukrainians in Canada? I'm thinking especially of the two communities, one that are represented by you and Alex, and the other, you mentioned the United Congress, that I don't have any representatives of here today, but perhaps you could explain who the two communities are and why they are quite opposite.
Well, they're quite opposite because of their different politics that are essential to the two communities. So the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians was first brought formed by the first wave of Ukrainian immigrants who came to Canada. The first and second waves played a role in establishing the Ukraine Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, which did go under the name of the Ukrainian Labor Temple and Farmer Association at the time. The name was changed later on in 1948, I believe, to the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians. But the politics of the first generation that came, the first two waves of immigrants that came, were very closely linked to the developments in Ukraine before and after the First World War. Before the First World War, Ukraine did not exist as a nation. It was born out of the conditions of the First World War, the collapse of the Austria-Hungarian Empire, the defeat of Germany, the defeat of the, you know, British Empire in many ways. And out of that came the Ukraine that really existed up until the demise of the Soviet Union, a socialist Ukraine. But the immigrants who came to Canada before you, in the early part of the 20th century, of course, came when Ukraine did not exist. They came, and many of them were connected with Ukrainian Social Democratic Party. The Ukrainian Social Democratic Party is not like the social democratic parties we have in Canada. It was one of these parties in Europe that was very much linked to, you know, revolutionary politics, socialist politics. So it was quite natural that the first half of the century of the work of the AUC into the 50s really was linked to this kind of political basis of what Ukraine should be, what kind of country it should be. Locally, in within Canada, the AUC was very progressive organization, very pro-worker, very pro social causes and restoration of the rights of First Nations people. You can read this through newspapers of the AUC throughout its history in that period. The Ukrainian Canadian Congress was formed after the Second World War, and it was really formed on the basis of this large influx of Ukrainian citizens who did not want to return to Ukraine because of their political role in opposition to the Soviet government, in the socialist government in Ukraine, and the role they had played in supporting Nazism, for example, men like Hanka. And this became the basis of the Ukrainian-Canadian Congress. It says in its founding documents that it is an anti-communist organization. Now, the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians was never a communist organization. It was a progressive social and political organization. Members of it did belong to the Communist Party of Canada. And it had no problems in working with an organization such as the Communist Party of Canada, being itself a progressive organization. So the differences in the two organizations really stem by the social and political makeup of the people who organized. And the Ukrainian Canadian Congress thus became really one of the underpinnings of the Cold War ideology in Canada. And it's reason that it has such close links with the Canadian state to this day.
Alex, as a part of your the Edmonton branch of the AUUC's letter on this whole issue in the Parliament, you've asked for you've demanded that monuments to the SS division that exist, a couple of them in your city, Edmonton, be removed by their owners or perhaps by edict of the local jurisdiction if necessary, but you also ask for an apology to be given to the community that you are that anteceded you. Glenn mentions the Labor Farmer Temple Association, the Ukrainian Labor Farmer Temple Association, that found themselves their property seized and their members, their leadership, arrested during the Second World War period, similar to the internment of the Japanese that went on at the same time. Do you want to speak briefly to that internment of Ukrainians in Canada and your organization's attempts to get an official apology for that.
Sure, yes. Just a slight correction to what Glenn said. The Ukrainian-Canadian Congress was formed during the Second World War in 1940 as the Ukrainian-Canadian Committee.